The Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 74, The Lost and the Plunderers Review.
Welcome to The Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of The Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of The Walking Dead Talk Through, if I don't say so myself. I'm Brian.
And I am Mark.
And tonight, we will be discussing Season 8, Episode 10, which is titled The Lost and the Plunderers. And before we get started, I just want to apologize, because I know that this episode is coming a few days late, especially when we got the last one out so early. But unfortunately, we are in the process of moving, like I said. So we are actually at the new place. And this is the first time we are recording from there. So things may sound a little different. We're using some new equipment as well. So if anything sounds a little off, I apologize for that, but hopefully we'll get things down as we go, and we shouldn't be so late next week. So before we get started discussing The Lost and the Plunderers, we have a little bit of feedback for the last episode, so I'm going to play Simon.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
All right, so first is from Gary. He says, "Hey, Brian, no hard feelings and no offense taken for not liking the scenario I mentioned in my previous email. I was not really saying I wanted it to be that way, but was just throwing a funny what-if idea I happened to think of. Ha ha. Anyhow, I didn't get a chance to hear the entire latest podcast as of the time of writing this, so I don't know yet if this was discussed, but near the end of the latest Walking Dead, it showed a future dream scene," which he puts in question mark, "where Negan was being a happy gardener. Do you think the writers are just messing with us, or will Negan actually have an Ebenezer Scrooge change of heart? Now, that would be an amazing storyline twist indeed." Well, I think they're kind of preparing us for the possibility that Negan is going to live past the end of the war. And, you know, I don't want to go into the comic book, but I would tell listeners to be prepared for that possibility. Mark, what do you think?
He should die.
Of course he should die.
I think Negan is most likely going to die in some way, shape, or form, but not right now. The show is going on in its own tangent, but as far as mimicking the actual comic, we don't know. We're all in that perplexed moment where we don't know what's going to happen. So my feeling is I hope Rick inflicts a lot of damage to Negan. That's all I want.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, now we can go on to this week's episode, which I already mentioned is Season 8, Episode 10, The Lost and the Plunderers, written by three writers, actually, all co-executive producers: Angela Kang, who will become the showrunner in Season 9, Channing Powell and Corey Reed, and directed by David Boyd, who I know has directed other episodes. So we are moving as requested by popular demand, moving news ratings and info until after our discussion of the episode. So we're going to get right into ratings. Hopefully you guys will like that. Please let us know if you like this change. So we're going to get to our ratings for this episode. So Mark, what did you think of, as far as a rating out of 10, The Lost and The Plunderers?
Well, this is one of the best episodes by far this season. I'm happy, man. I give it 9.5 minced meat garbage pail kids.
I would agree. In fact, I'll go even further and I'll say this, without a doubt, is the best episode of The Walking Dead ever. So I give it 10 out of 10 pureed garbage walkers. Oh, okay. It wasn't the best ever, but it was great and probably the best episode of the season. I know that, episode 4, some guy I also really enjoyed, but I think that this probably is the best. And I will say that is the greatest because we have seen the greatest thing I've ever seen on The Walking Dead. Something that made me cry from joy, even though I guess I didn't cry last week over Carl's death. I'm kidding. I didn't cry. And we'll get to what I thought was so awesome, but I'm giving it 9.6 out of 10 fresh walker trash.
Oh my.
Yeah. So we have some listener ratings. We actually got quite a bit of feedback past the deadline because we kept on extending the deadline. My fault. But Mark, why don't you start?
PB and Zane says, rating 7/10 piles of Walker mush. Ew.
Cheryl gives this episode 8 out of 10 coffins to Negan.
Dieta Patterson, I give this episode 7.5 out of 10. Negan, you lie. It's not Rick's fault. Carl died.
I would have to agree with that, actually. Steve Brown is next. He says, I guess I forgot to contribute. He was one of the ones that got in past our original deadline after I basically cajoled... coerce them. He says, let me see. He gives it a rating of 9 out of 10 broken safety chains.
Cool. Faith McQuinn, this episode gets 8.5 out of 10 blue handprints.
And Kyle is next, who I will thank in advance because he will be editing this episode this week. He gives it 7.5 out of 10 Walker grinder meat.
Wow. Lara Willie Swink says 7.8 out of 10 zombie loafs.
Zombie loafs. All right. So let's go for some awesome sauce. Awesome sauce. All right. First is PB and Zane. She says, Rick leaves Jadis behind. Finally, he learned. Yeah, although he still went over there.
Cheryl Fox, Jadis' ingenuity of killing all her heapster walkers, that has made me rethink my supper menu for a few weeks. Also, Negan's care and sorrow for Carl's death. I loved how Rick and Negan actually conversed for a second before the pointing fingers and threats started backing up.
Yeah, a couple things I'll say about that. I don't think I'll be wanting chili for a little while. It had kind of like a pudding look as well, except red. Very frothy. Yeah. I liked the interaction with Rick and Negan as well. I mean, I thought that Negan truly seemed to be sad that Carl was dead. You know, I know he certainly thought, you know, well of him. So, all right. Well, Dieta is next. She says, Rick leaving Jadis to suffer in her pile of rubbish she created.
Steve Brown, Simon standing up to Negan, but not enough to get him killed yet. Rick and Negan radio conversation. There was a lot talking in this episode. The nod to the fans with Simon asking about the helipad.
Yeah. Yeah, the helipad. It's funny that I remember, when there was that shot of, I think, Rick over the, you know, the top of the mountain of rubble, people saw a helipad and, you know, they brought it up. I remember, I think, the guys on the Talking Dead talked about that for a while. Yeah, so it was good that they mentioned it. I wonder if that was always in play. I imagine that it was. I can't think that they would have like accidentally, drew that helipad. And based on, you know, I won't say this is a spoiler, but based on, your namesake there, Robert Kirkman on Talking Dead, you saw that, right?
Yes. And, yeah. I actually brought that up on a conversation and another Facebook page that you were involved in, and yeah. Everybody laughed at it, but I actually caught that and I noticed that through somebody else through YouTube, and I was very interested in the idea. And then as soon as he saw the helicopter in that one episode looking up at that time, was it this season or last season? I can't remember which.
What, the helipad?
No, the helicopter. Oh. And it made me think about the actual helipad because I remember seeing it because I freeze framed it from that season because I have that season on Blu-ray and I freeze framed it and I took a picture and, it's there plain to see. And it's one of those that you could buy for $10,000. No matter what, online. It's a portable helipad.
I want to say that it was either episode 5 or 6 that Rick saw that I think it might have been episode 6, but I don't know. It was 5 or 6. It may have been 5 because I think 5 wasn't 5 the one that Rick and Daryl got in that stupid fight.
I think so. It definitely was the episode when Jadis threw Rick into the pit with Winslow. And then he comes up out on top and he's standing above the dumps, as it were. And you see that fake bird pass across.
Right.
But you actually see to the far left, you actually do see a helipad.
Right.
It was kind of, you know, nobody really talked about it. It was one of those weird things. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
Now we got that coming back though.
Yeah. So like the helipad, like you said, that was, I think, episode 10 of last season. And then the helicopter was episode five or six. I think I want to say 5 now, but I'm not 100% sure of that. It might have been episode 6. It was probably, yeah, you know what? Probably was episode 6, and I'm going on about it far too long.
You're better than I am at this, honestly. You have a better memory than I do.
I have a photographic memory, although it's a trick photographic memory because I don't remember everything. I remember stupid stuff. Yeah. So the other thing that I'll say is that I tend to think based on Simon's actions this episode when Negan finds out what he did, and I think some of it depends upon timing, because I know at this point Negan doesn't know how truly bad things are. Well, I know he's gotten a taste of it from the 38 prisoners, but he doesn't know about Gavin yet. And he doesn't know that Dwight has turned, which makes me wonder, what happened to the neck tattoo girl who would have, you know, ratted him out? We haven't seen her.
Yeah, she's been disappearing.
Yeah. So anyway, he doesn't know. So depending on that, you know, the timing of Simon dying is hard to predict right now. But I tend to think that he's not going to survive. He's going to end up getting himself killed over what he did this episode.
Yeah, no more BJ Honeycutt.
Yeah, I saw that picture. It was funny. Some people were comparing, just so you guys, listeners, get it. Some people were comparing Hawkeye and BJ Honeycutt on MASH to Negan and Simon because they looked kind of similar in the picture. There is a little bit of a resemblance, I think, between Mike Farrell and Simon Hawk, but or Stephen Hawk. Anyway, Faith is next. She says, Michonne getting out of that walker with the fire extinguisher and then going straight back to trying to put out the fire. You know, it reminds me, though, they need some of those old chemical extinguishers. Burn those walkers away. Woo-wee! Little redneck there. Woo-wee!
Woo-wee! All right. Comic Adams, my awesome sauce, which I see a lot here, and I'll say the same thing, is the grinder of the walkers. That would have been handy if they could expand on that when they led the herd from the quarry a few seasons ago, which I agree with.
Yeah, Simon, I agree too.
Simon just losing it, I'm enjoying it because it wasn't what I was expecting. I was more on the side of him disagreeing with Negan, but not all out. Okay, I will just kill one. Then no, bye, y'all. I really enjoyed seeing that. He's going to be a problem for Negan, which I agree with.
Yeah. Yeah, it just goes to show you the difference between the two. Like, I think Simon is calculating, but he has a sadistic streak that, you know, and obviously his frustration, he basically took it out on the garbage people. You know, they were, a convenient, replacement for Maggie and the Hilltop. He would have rather have done that to the Hilltop, I think, but, unfortunately they were, they were the wrong people at the wrong time. So, Kyle, I agree with you. I thought of season six too, that, they could have very much used that thing if they had been able to just basically, herd all the walkers into the grinder would have solved the problem very quickly and left a lot of hazardous waste.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, next is Laura. She says, the scenes between Simon and Jadis were great. In fact, both of these actors shined in this episode. Stephen Ogg was fantastically menacing and maniacal, as always, and I continue to think Simon is a more compelling antagonist than Negan. But Pollyanna McIntosh really surprised me, finally breaking that weirdo Romulan. I've said that on the podcast, that she looks like a Romulan, and she does. She just needs a pointy ears. Romulan facade to show us a real person terrified of the safety of her people. And even though I don't understand her having time to change into the white gown, the aesthetic of her standing there in the junkyard dressed in white with bleeding feet was pretty macabre as she summoned her people into the Zed shredder. Yeah, I really don't understand the gown either. I mean, what was the deal there? I heard another podcast suggest that maybe she was assaulted or like sexually assaulted by the saviors, but it's a possibility, but I don't think that's what happened. But what do you make of that?
I think she's just very unique, and she's pretty much involved in her own mindset and her life, and she created a world in that junkyard and then got everybody else to be involved and living in that world. And that's just my thought. I think that she created that, and she was able to do something with the saviors to make a way of life for her own people, as well as giving to the saviors, as well as leading people to the saviors as well. But, you know, that's just, you know, my theory.
Yeah. All right. Well, now it's time for our awesome sauce. I guess I will segue right into this. Based on, Lara's point, and I would say that not just Stephen Ogg and Pollyanna McIntosh, but practically all of the acting in this episode was fantastic. Like the Oceanside, actually not the Oceansiders. They were, not so great, I thought, but, Ross Marquand and, Caitlin Nacon, did really good job, doing that, but also, you know, Danai Gurira and Jeffrey Dean Morgan was, I thought, really good this episode. So, you know, I'd say all around, was some great acting.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. They all brought the A game to this, in my opinion. They were awesome. Caitlin Nacon is very underrated for what she does at her age. Now, mind you, we lost Chandler Riggs. So who do we have to propel that? What? She's in her teens. So we need that teenager to propel that storyline. So now we have preteen, and we have, Madison Lintz, her brother is playing Henry. So now we have somebody who is in their preteens that is going on with the show. So we have that perspective, and then we have, little girl, Judith, and then we have the other one, that they picked up at one of the, savior compounds at the satellite.
So, oh yeah, Gracie.
Yeah. So we have a variety of kids, but to lead that pack would be Caitlin's character, which would be Enid.
Mark, what's your first awesome sauce?
No more Garbage Pail Kids. Plus, we got to hear Jadis talk normal for once. Oh my God, thank you.
Yeah, and we'll just segue into my next one, which is the death of the garbage people. So I agree with you 100% there. And not only did they die and turn into walkers, but they got turned into liquefied walker goo. Which almost seems like something we'd see in Z Nation or something like that. But what a fitting ending for the trash people, wouldn't you say? You know, they become toxic sludge. I hated them, but the way they died, now I love them. Okay, I cannot say that with a straight face. I will never love them, but I did. They were given a very fitting death, and particularly I enjoyed seeing the death of Brion, who had the name of Brion, and I emphatically say that his name was Brion because I remember Jadis called him Brion, but I was getting tired of people calling him Brian.
So we're both agreement that Garbage Pail Kid Chili is okay.
What?
A Yeah, that's you know, an element of, you know, how every once in a while a fast food joint will like get accused of like, you know, having horse meat or something like that. Yeah, we don't want to ever hear of a fast food place, you know, substituting, you know, Soylent Green for. Anyway.
All right. So my other would be concentrated character points with their names in front of it. It gives newer viewers a point of perspective and a name. It gives a background to each character, somebody who just started actually watching the show and then actually could get into it from where it's at now. And then they could always go back. But with the way they actually pointed it out, Rick's story, Michonne's story, Negan's story, Simon's story, it points out particulars to those particular characters and what they're doing within the episode. It pointed out with Michonne where she was going, what she was feeling. Rick, where he was going, and in him actually confronting Negan on the walkie-talkie. And then there was Simon and him confronting the heapsters or garbage pail kids, what I call them. And then attacking them and getting rid of them and then leaving Jadis alone. And then there was a few others. I think there was Enid and Ross.
It was Enid.
Yeah. It was just Enid at that point, right?
Yeah. 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 So Aaron didn't get a card, but it was Enid's card.
Okay. So basically you're seeing individual stories. So it's showing some sort of development within each character structure for the next few episodes. Cause this is episode 10. So now we have what? 6 more episodes. So something critical is going to happen within each of these characters during that time. And we've seen some things in previews. We've seen things in trailers, that's going to actually push forward the actual episodes. And each is going to be concentrated for each character that they actually pointed that out for this episode, I think. So I think, those cards that they show for every character in this episode is going to come to light in future episodes. And, I'm hoping it unravels in some way where it all comes to an end at the very end of the season.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like this, you know, they've done it a couple of times, like particularly I remember in No Sanctuary, they did this with the then and now kind of thing. I liked it. I think it was a good way to kind of sew the time line together a little bit. Cause you could tell that the, call from Rick, you know, tied in to the, call that we later see him make. And, you know, some thought that, you know, that had something to do with the, letters that Carr wrote, but I don't think that he wrote letters to Simon or Jadis. So, you know, I don't think that was the case, but I did like that. I thought it was good. And, you know, another point to bring up, cause was there 6 of them? I think. Let's see. There was Michonne, Rick, Negan, Simon, Enid, and was there anybody else? Maybe it was just the 5.
I think so.
I can't think of if there was anyone else. But yeah. So with that, I think that it would be nice if we, you know, if that continued, but. The point I was going to make is that we saw that there were 3 writers of this episode, and I tend to think that like probably the Michonne section and the Rick section were probably written by the same writer, and maybe the Jadis and Simon sections were, and maybe the Negan and Simon sections were, something like that. I don't know, but I tend to think that that's how they divvied up this episode. They kind of, it was kind of a combination of three, was either three stories that became one or was intentionally written this way. And they just kind of like divvied it up, you know, the sections of it kind of, so that, you know, maybe Angela Kang wrote the, Michonne and Rick sections and, you know, et cetera. I don't know who wrote what, but that's my guess. So, All right. Do you have any more awesome sauce?
Nope. That was all.
Then let's move on to the weak variety.
You're worthless and weak.
All right. First is PB and Zane. She says, seeing that Jadis made it and can actually talk normally. So you didn't like that. I guess that means that I could see why you didn't like the fact that she survived, but I guess you find it annoying that she can actually talk normally after all the episodes of the crazy Yoda speak. So I would agree with that, I did actually like it, and I felt a tad bit of sympathy for this character that has done nothing but annoy me ever since she showed up, you know.
Cheryl Fox, I thought throwing Enid's story in the middle of this week was weak. Michonne, I understand, and then having Simon come and talk to the Heapsters was okay. Since they ended with Rick and Michonne there, but just throwing Enid and that, nothing to do with the other three stories, it felt out of place.
I would definitely agree with that. I thought that that part of the story was the weakest part. And I kind of hinted at this before, but I didn't find the Oceansiders compelling. Like, what's her name? Cindy? In past episodes, I found her very interesting, but she was very wooden this time around. I didn't care for her character, you know?
You're worthless and weak!
All right. Next is Steve Brown. He says, I hope Simon's "do you know" question was not that the Saviors have a helicopter, because if they do, it's been the best kept secret for a while. Huh. Well, I hope that they don't have a helicopter, because I agree with you. That would kind of be a kind of like one of these.
What?
But that makes you wonder, did the trash people have a helicopter? And certainly we know about this helicopter. So, and we see your namesake, clumsily, but funnily, steer around the question on Talking Dead. Sounds like there's going to be definitely something, coming up with a helicopter.
I think there's going to be something missing that we do not know that the Heapsters were involved with.
Now, one thought that came up and made me think about it from what Steve said, like, is it possible that underneath the, like, because we never seen where they actually live, right? Seems like they're underground or like in containers that are above the, or sorry, not above, but below the trash. But what if there's like underground, you know, what if it's a bunker? What if, you know, deep down inside this was a military bunker, you know, to keep the line of succession or whatever. And, you know, it's the trash, you know, the landfill was just a cover.
That would mean that there are other people down there.
Yeah.
And there are other survivors other than Jadis, meaning that when she ran away with her nightgown, that she would run to them and create another society.
Reminds me of the, was it in the second Planet of the Apes movie? Those like
the people ones that were burned
from yeah.
the nuclear blasts.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand what you're saying and where you're going with this. And
yeah.
It does come to that idea and that thought. Oh my God. And they had telepathic powers and they did all this. Yeah. Yeah. But I do remember that. Yes, I'm of that age and I do remember that. And I did enjoy and I still have those on Blu-ray. Thank you.
And what if that explains Jadis's strange language, the fact that they were telepathic?
I highly doubt it.
Yeah.
I think it was just code for them just to have their own speech. And it was her idea of having her own kind of tribe. And now that that tribe has been done for the most part, if there are a few survivors that are under the trash heap, then they will move on and become something else. If she survives and they all also survive and are able to get out. So if that's the case, she could create her own society. And I'm not going to say any comic spoilers, but maybe it's a whisper to a scream.
Maybe. All right. Next one.
Kyle McAdams. The separate character titles. I didn't get this. I was expecting it wouldn't have to do with the characters reading what Carl said in the notes. But it wasn't really. Might feel different if I got a rewatch, but just didn't click with me.
Well, we liked it, so I guess that brings it down a point. So it's instead of it being a plus two, it's a plus one.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Laura's next. She said she got a couple of them. She says, Enid and Aaron's interactions with the Oceansiders. Isn't the definition of crazy doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result? Yes, it is, actually. Rick kept going back to the Heapsters and kept getting betrayed. The Alexandrians keep going back to Oceanside and they keep getting rejected. It feels like a lack of creativity on the writer's part to keep rehashing these same scenarios. Plus, the editing seemed very clipped and rushed. And the fact that Enid had zero empathy for her first human kill seemed pretty out of character for a girl who's been portrayed as fairly caring with Maggie, Aaron, etc. lately. Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think the episode really explained why. And Caitlin Nacon talked about this on Talking Dead, how the death was justified, how she like practically, you know, forced it. Cause that has, I guess, less to do with this episode and more to do with, you know, episode 8, but, you know, that it wasn't obvious then, and it's still not obvious to me now that, you know, that the death was unavoidable. So, secondly, she has also the cheesy kung fu movie style extreme zoom ins on Rick and Michonne when they enter the junkyard. This and the slow motion fades from last half season is making me feel like they're letting a film school intern play around with the director's chair or in the director's chair. I don't know. I didn't really have much of an issue with the extreme zoom ins. In fact, when I saw you post this in another Facebook group, I was like, what's she talking about? Because it wasn't obvious to me. And then when I went back and saw it, you know, the last time I watched it, it was kind of like, oh, I guess that's what she was talking about, but didn't seem that bad to me. It wasn't like that obvious. It was a little, you know, it was a little obvious, but not, I didn't find it that obvious. But yeah, the slow motion face fades. Yeah, I didn't like that. So just wasting of time.
I know people that are in film and they actually have to do that kind of thing. It's supposed to give some sort of drama to the actual scene and to give a little bit more for the actual episode. But, you know, you take it with what you have, you know, it actually, you know, we could always analyze the actual show and then get from it what we want. But a lot of people look a lot of deep into it. And me, yeah. I just take things as they come.
All right. Well, that's it for Listener Weak Sauce. So our weak sauce, what you got, Mark?
My weak sauce? That would be Aaron staying at Oceanside. It doesn't make sense. What is he going to, you know, what is he going to offer them? He likes guys.
Yeah. Well, that last part aside, I really didn't understand it. I mean, maybe he's like channeling his inner Alexandria recruiter from season 5. I don't know, but I don't really understand why he's so motivated to get them into the fight. I mean, what are they going to offer at this point besides cannon fodder? You know?
I think they're really trying to rehash the idea of him being the recruiter, like you were saying, but him trying to get more people on Rick's side or on Hilltop's side, because there's no more Alexandria. So the more the merrier. The more that they have in their group to go against the saviors, the better. So, you know, the Oceanside had a lot of weaponry. They already took a lot of it, but they also need the manpower or women power at this point. And I
people think, power.
Exactly. You know, the more people, the better. And honestly, the more people they have more over the saviors, because, with that kind of zombie bomb that Daryl had to do and force into at that point in that one episode, it forced all the saviors to get out and run and leave. How much more of them is there on the savior side? And now that if, Hilltop, the kingdom and what's left of Alexandria all form together, how much of an opposition does the saviors have over all these people that have survived the saviors attacks? So it shows more on Rick's point. So it's all about pretty much all out war at this point. You know, it's what's left of everybody at this point between these divided communities, and a majority of it being communities coming together against one opposing one that's been strangleholding all the others at this point.
Well, he doesn't know about what happened to Alexandria, though. So, you know, I know that they could use them, and he also doesn't know what happened at, well, okay, he knows what happened to the kingdom soldiers. He knows that part of the story. He doesn't know what happened at Alexandria. And so anyway, and they don't have weapons because they took our people took them all. So, you know, other than, I don't know, I understand why he wants them, but I don't understand, you know, what the point is other than them actually, you know, fighting for, their freedom, you know, like I understand it to a point, but I don't completely understand it.
Are you thinking of Negan's perspective, or are you thinking Rick's perspective about him not knowing?
Well, I'm thinking about Aaron doesn't know about Alexandria. And so him trying to get them because of what happened in Alexandria, doesn't sit because he doesn't know what happened there. So, because they left before that. So it would be, you know, a question of him wanting them because of the people and for them to fight for the cause, I guess. So I see it to a point, but I don't think I personally would do what he's doing. You know, it seems like just something he's doing to pass the time to get over the death of Eric, if anything. But I kind of mentioned this before, but like, you know, I really didn't care for the Oceansiders at all. Like this episode, they really weren't very compelling. So, you know, I just don't, that was the weak part of the episode as far as I was concerned. And that's pretty much my only weak sauce I had.
Okay.
All right. So we have some what sauce?
What?
Which we don't have too often, but, Mark, what you got?
Jade is talking normal. What in the blue hell was that about? She created a world for herself, for her people. They were living in what Carol said to Morgan when she met King Ezekiel in the kingdom. This is fantasy land. And plus the solar panels and the helipad being brought up. What is that about? It's like we had clues, but we didn't have clues about the solar panels. The helipad, there was that little bit of segue in that one image. And those of you who are like me will actually pause because you tend to look at things. And especially with that weird bird at that time, and you see certain things and you see that helipad. What was that about? And then they bring it up and then you see a helicopter. What's going on? So, you know, there's, what was Jadis up to and what was those Garbage Pail Kids up to at that point? You know, there's a lot of unknowing, and I have a funny feeling something's going to come about that towards the end of the season of what Jadis was up to, and there's going to be answers. I don't know when, but they will be.
Well, I know what Simon would say. But what I would say is this.
There's a conspiracy out there. You know what I'm saying? There's a conspiracy. A C-O-N-spiracy.
That always makes me laugh. Yeah, so we talked about this earlier, but you know, I tend to think that either this is a new baddie or a new, you know, a new community, you know, or like we were talking about the dwellers underground. Cause I don't know. I mean, it would stand to reason they're by DC. So something like that could exist and this would be a perfect cover for it. You know, like some underground bunker for the chiefs of staff or, you know, whatever the military, the president, you know, suddenly we'll see president, you know, whoever is president in this. I'd be funny if Barack Obama, you know, did a guest, a cameo. Cause you know, given it was 2010 when the zombie apocalypse supposedly started in this universe. So, you know, if he was the president, he would still be president unless Trump was in the bunker and he became
president. Oh, no, please, no.
I'm not going to touch that one with a 10-foot pole. Anyway, I don't want to get political on this, but although I could, doggone it. To that end, my what sauce, I guess, not so much about the helipad and all that stuff, but about Jadis, like I mentioned the nighty, but you know, she had no shoes on either. And we see that one You know, I didn't have this written down, but I had to look at this a couple of times because it looked like she had six toes on one foot. I had to look at it, and I don't think that was the case, but I don't know if it was the angle that they shot it at or that her feet were swollen or something, but I kept looking at it. I'm like, that looks like six toes. So anyway,
we won't discriminate against you, Pollyanna McIntosh. Please, we love you. You're a great person.
it would be kind of funny if that were the case, but anyway, so you know, she had no shoes, and obviously, you know, it looked like she had a pretty bad gouge on one of her feet.
Yes.
You know, so I don't really understand what that all was about. I mean, why did she do that on her own?
I have a funny feeling that was her getting back to basics, stripping herself down to who she truly was, and deep in her mind, she was that little girl in a nightgown, stripped away of all her courage and everything else. It could be one of those segues in some sort of artistic format of saying they took away her courage, which was this front of somebody who is a strong female structure in charge of a group. And then she was reduced to a little girl and trying to survive. And her last plea was to Rick at that point, take me with you. It was her crying and being the little girl that she was, or little, you know, that person that we all are as a child. And I think that's what it all boiled down to, is that with her feet all disheveled and scarred and scraped because of the rubble and the actual garbage and everything that's going on around her that, you know, she created a world about. And it's, you know, kind of a descriptive format. And, you know, I kind of saw that as such, but her embracing her courage and then chomping up all those zombies, all those Zeds and that crump, you know, the cruncher, as I call it, you know, it showed her perseverance and becoming a newer person. So whether that comes into fruition, we don't know. We'll find out. I have a funny feeling we're going to find out. Might not be the end of this season, but it might show up in the beginning of next season. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to our feedback. We've already played Simon, but we'll play him again.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
All right. Why don't you start with PB and Zane?
PB and Zane stinks that Rick is right back into let's get go get what's our mode. But I guess there is no time to grieve in the apocalypse. Negan and Simon's one-on-one was kind of weird. Nails the head was really cool. I totally forgot about the beach people. I wanted to forget the garbage people. God, I can't stand them. Oh, wait. Looks like they may be done. Yippee! Is it Rick's fault that Carl is dead? Is Negan right? Is something wrong with me? Ah! The episode started off a bit slow, but I think it got better and better as it went on. I like this one way better than last week's, obviously. Little personal story here. My second son does an awesome impression of Negan. When he gets into character, he even looks a lot like him. I'll have to get him to let me take pics of to post now. Now I have a difficult time watching Negan. It creeps me out. I'm all like, oh my God, that's Glenn. roll my butt off.
Yeah, so that was about what something she said early on in her feedback there. Yeah, you know, they should use nail guns more often, because that seems to be an effective way of killing walkers. It's economical. Certainly isn't as wasteful as bullets, and you know, if you can get the nail back, you can reuse them. Although I tend to think that's, you know, not the case, but I would tend to think that it would be a lot easier to find nails than it would to find bullets and to make bullets. You know, like you could make, if you had to make them, you could make nails a lot easier than you could make bullets. So they should use them more often. But then again, I guess it's a close weapon. And I heard another podcast, and it's kind of funny. The, I forget what you call it, but it was used in, was it No Country for Old Men? That kind of cattle spike. They used it in Fear, right? At the hospital in, season one, the doctor had kind of I forget what you call that kind of, thing.
Cattle spike.
Yeah.
And
she had one of those.
It was almost like a bullet that issued a charge to something that spiked into the head.
Yeah. It was like a retracting bullet almost.
Right.
Yeah. They should use that kind of thing more often. But then again, you know, you'd need power and you'd need, you have to get in, you know, close contact. So.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Next is Dieta. She says, Simon is going to die. I hope Maggie is the one to put him out of his misery. Negan is an all-time jerk for trying to make Rick believe it's his fault that Carl died. Rick needs to kill him, and all his loyal followers then follow Carl's request, in my opinion. Dieta is a long-time Negan hater.
I could see that.
I think I'm comfortable in saying that. Wouldn't you agree, Dieta? You have not liked Negan from the beginning. Overall, this episode was all right, but not my favorite. Then she says, I don't know why, but my excitement for my favorite show is dwindling, but I'm still going to watch over this all-out war crap in Negan. I guess this was a high point in the comic, but I don't remember the governor's part dragging on like this. The claimers, the wolves, and Terminus people didn't last this long. And then she adds with kind of like, how would you describe those? Yeah, sad or disgusted emojis? I don't know. But I would agree. You know, this, if you think about it, we first started hearing about Negan in season six, very first, you know, appearance of them before we know who they are, was in that, Always Accountable episode from,
yes.
Yeah. And, then we hear him mentioned by name, in the season eight, you know, mid-season finale. And then, of course, you know, in the premiere, we see them get rocket launched.
Well, it was
RPG'd.
You said season eight. Actually, it was.
Oh, no, I meant season episode eight of season six, is yeah. What I meant to say.
Yeah.
Sorry right. About that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what?
No. Yeah. I do agree with her. It's like, you had all these big bads at some point. The governor was there at what? How many seasons was that? Was what? Two seasons total?
He was a season and a half.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even in the second season. He was only, in like four episodes. Well, I think we see his head in episode nine, but, you know, he was only in some of season four, and But in the case of Negan, we get a whole half season of them building up Negan. And then now we're, you know, past a season and a half of full on, you know, Negan. So, you know, essentially the Saviors have been, a force in this show now for two seasons, two and a half seasons almost. So, you know, it's enough. And I think, you know, I think we will, if this went into season nine, I think even more people would be leaving the show, and more about this later.
Well, I could add to that.
Okay.
Honestly, for those that are concerned about Negan, I have a funny feeling after this season, the big bad will be put away in some way, whether it be death or prison. but the thing is, you have to look at this in this perspective. Rick has battled the governor. He has gone to Terminus. He's gone through all these emotional battles within himself with all these people. He's met somebody who is very similar to him on the extreme opposite point of view, or maybe not so, because if we were in Negan's perspective, Rick is the enemy, and Rick sees Negan as the enemy. So, it's all of kind of a little bit of a deterrence in some way. And it's going to come to a point of if he dispatches Negan, then he will continue, Rick will continue on his journey and doing what he normally does. But if he doesn't dispatch Negan, he will have to work within himself to deal with what's going on in the world and how to overcome somebody who is similar like him. Negan has his point and Rick has his views. Both are not coming in between to understand one another. So I have a funny feeling that the show in itself is going to try to wrap itself pretty much around what's going on in the comic. But, if they get rid of Negan, then it's going to be Rick's world. So, we won't know until the end of the season, or maybe even season nine, what happens with Negan. So my feeling is, this was Rick's ultimate adversary for the show. And, it's up to the writers at this point. And, I'm looking forward to seeing it because honestly, I've been watching the show since day one. So, my feeling is if you're a fan of the show from day one or whenever you started and you binge watched everything, if you're going to be there, be there. We're always here. Everybody doesn't want to see these bad things and we all have our favorite character, but you know, we have to, you know, keep watching to see what's going on. That's the ultimate drive to this. We want to see how the story ends. So, I'm with you, everybody. I want to see where this goes.
So do I. But more on this later. All right, let's move on to Todd.
So, Todd Schwartzberg, I'm really glad to learn that Jadis can speak proper English. I guess when she pushed to the edge by Simon, she has no one to keep the persona up. I'm not buying that her deal was to deliver Rick to the Saviors the whole time, but I think that Rick should have helped Jadis get out. He would probably, if he wasn't dealing with losing Carl, Simon's clearly a dead man. I like that Negan seems to be a human in that he said that Carl's gone. You know, Negan was sad that Carl was gone. But that the whole exchange between Negan and Rick was weird. I can't see Negan as a human after everything. But then again, from a certain point of view, some could say that the same for Rick, which pretty much sums what I was saying before.
Yeah. the exchange between the two of them, you know, it seemed rather heartfelt at first, but then it certainly devolved. And Rick, he quickly dismissed, you know, Carl's, you know, wishes there, because, you know, essentially he wants him to stop. He wants him to make peace, but it's too late for that. Yeah. But, you know, maybe this will change in the next few episodes. Like, you know, sad Rick, as we, you know, saw, you know, in those scenes from last week. And of course, from the, premiere, you know, something seems like it's going to go bad and it's going to really upset him and, give him a lot of blood, which I took another look at that after last week. And I don't think he was wounded, to be honest with you. He might have been, but I don't think it was, I tend to think it might have been someone else's blood. But we'll see. We'll see about that. All right. Moving on. GJ. I don't know if GJ is a he or a she, so I'll just say GJ says, I thought this was a compelling episode. I like how it employed a different format to both touch on the resonance of Carl's death and also to move the story forward by opening up some new plot directions. I continue to appreciate what Stephen Ogg has done with his character. How Simon will go out at the hands of Negan, Jadis, or even Maggie. And I also wonder how the blue paint scenes will link up. And what's the deal with the helipad? Yeah, indeed. A lot of people are wondering about that. We haven't yet talked about the blue paint, because that was pretty prominent. You know, we see the handprints that Carl and Judith made. We see those again, you know, at the start. We see Simon have the paint on his boots, and I think that played into Rick as well. I don't know. I don't know about that one exactly for sure, but I know that the blue paint seemed to play a lot of was prominent in this episode. So
yeah, it's gonna come out sometime later. Obviously, Negan's gonna spot it, or somebody on Negan's crew is gonna spot it and know where it's from.
Yeah.
Now, did Jadis get that from Alexandria? How did she get that paint? What is this whole thing about cats? Because Michonne had to go back into the bar to get a cat.
Yeah.
And why is Jadis constantly painting cats?
Yeah.
And creating cats?
We saw them. Yeah, we saw them too in this episode.
So, yeah, there's some sort of symbolistic view upon this. Are we going to see Michonne and Jadis getting together and hanging out and being buds because they love cats?
And Rick.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. So we don't know. Everything's going to come into fruition in some sort of way within the next, well, we got what, 6 episodes? So, you know, something's going to come out. And whether or not we see Jadis again is another story. So, but
yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Just that, I really wonder, about, you know, how that's going to play out. I don't know. Like, I think there's some, thought that either the way that Jadis left Rick, or sorry, Rick left Jadis, you know, may come back to haunt him, or that, like, you know, what, something's going to go down between, Simon and, you know, any number of people. The blue paint, something's going to trigger, and he's going to, I think they're going to know that Simon was there because of the boots, like he had it all over his boots. So, you know, there's several things there. I don't know how it's going to play out, but at some point, you know, I tend to think that Rick is going to, and probably the saviors are going to deny, oh, you know how this could play out? I'll tell you how this could play out, just thinking about it. Okay, so Simon tells Negan that the trash people are dealt with, and Negan doesn't know that they've been eliminated. Rick knows, and he also knows about the blue paint. So he's probably going to hear from Negan that he doesn't know anything about them being dead, and he'll be surprised or whatever. And then he'll see Simon, and Simon will have the blue paint on his boots. And that's how Negan will find out about what Simon did. So that's my prediction that I just came up with. but, you know, using my story, just my background in writing.
Fortitude and writing.
Yeah. Mostly writing.
A few ideas myself, but I'm going to keep them to myself because, well, yeah, my last name's Kirkman. So I'm going to leave that. All right. So we should
move on. Yeah.
Faith McQuinn. Michonne. Oh, dear Lord. My heart hurts. Carl called Michonne his best friend, but she was also his mother. Side note from me. I was wanting that comic book thing that, spoilers in 1, 2, 3. Andrea in the actual comic books actually called, Carl called Andrea mom. And, yeah. That never got put into the show. And I so desperately wanted that because Michonne is the Andrea of the TV show. And, I really wanted that to happen. That didn't happen. So I'm going to move on with, Faith's, thoughts. The handprints got me real good, but her running to put out the fire on the gazebo snuck up and surprised me with tears. Also, although that the episode she used her Carl voice with Rick, it's softer with a smile behind it, and she didn't talk to anyone else like that. I feel that she and Rick are going to butt heads soon because Michonne wants to honor Carl's wishes way more than Rick does, which I think will happen. I think if you look at Michonne's relationship with Carl in the actual series over the past, what, 2 seasons, they've grown together. And it's what Carl stated, that they were best friends. And I do think in my mind, in the actual show, Carl thought of Michonne as his other mother.
Yeah.
But it was never mentioned. And that was so heart wrenching for me not to hear that. I needed that. Not because it was in the comic that Andrea stated that, but the fact that, they had that kind of relationship. They both had, secrets that and feelings about situations, and they shared, and you don't really get that much in any show, and those two characters really melded together very well. And whoever wrote those characters and those episodes where they actually spoke that way worked so well in the show. And there's only so often that you do get that in a show where you actually see the feeling. And it's not only based upon the actual actor's way of conveying the words, but also the people who wrote it. Now, mind you, I'm a person from music standpoint, and I like Bear McCreary and everything he's been doing for the show. Lately, it's been a lot like music from John Carpenter's music from back in the 1970s into the 80s, which I love. But, you know, when you have writing like that, it's pure gold. And, it showed so much strength between the characters, and people have been moving that forward for every episode. And I really want to see that more so with other episodes with other characters. I'm hoping Angela Kang gets more writers that gets them to that point. And, that whole Carl and Michonne thing, it was kind of thrown off the side, in my opinion, in some way, but I still remembered. And I still remembered those previous episodes. So, I feel in her way.
I tend to think that maybe some of that was thrown away because of, real world stuff, you know, particularly, Danai Gurira's, role in the Marvel movies, probably making her less available, particularly at the beginning of this season. I have to think that that had something to do with it. I do agree with you though about the fact that, it would have, I think, made last week's episode, hit that much more. And maybe I would have cried if he would have called her mom, because, she was his best friend, but she was also, you know, like you said, his second mother. And, I've gone back. I don't want to get into this too much because we are kind of running long, but, I had more thoughts of why the episode didn't really hit for me as well as I thought it could have last episode. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that we kept on going away from the Alexandria. Once you would start to feel something, you'd go back to the kingdom. And I thought that editing was, not the best way of handling it. And just die for Pete's sake. I mean, he spent the whole episode dying, and, you know, by the time he finally died, it was, you know, kind of, really almost, anticlimactic, you know, so. Because he's going to die. So, and, you know, it just the way that they could have made it more heroic, you know, and it would have hit better. So just, there's certain things that they could have done, last episode that would have made it better. Let's continue.
Simon, I hate you. That is all. Jadis, I cannot stand this woman, but thank you, writers, for making me give us a crap about her roughly 60 seconds. I guess watching someone losing everyone and everything can pull the heartstrings for just a moment. I too wanted to sit and just take that all in, though I think a cold beer would be better than a can of applesauce. But you know, you go with what you have. P.S. You know, she probably already has no sense of smell living in a dump, but oh my God, wouldn't that smell be just too much to take?
You'd have to wonder.
It's like you lose your sense of smell.
Just to respond to one thing there, she said, I wondered about the applesauce too, and I saw it mentioned elsewhere that it was probably a case of applesauce that they took from Alexandria.
Correct.
You know, when Gabriel got kidnapped.
Yep.
So I wondered about that as well after I heard that that suggested. All right, let's move on. Next, she's got a lot more. So.
Oh yeah, she does. Rick and Negan. I don't even know what to think of Rick right now. I thought Carl's death would really change him somehow, but I think he's gotten so good at repression that there has been no surface change yet. He broke down a little, but he's still pretty single-mindedly focused on ending Negan. I really wish he'd just listen to Michonne, pull over, and read that letter. Read the letter, Rick. Your son was a smart young man. He's got good words for you. I'm sure of it. As far as Negan goes, I was almost softening up for him to just a moment when he showed genuine remorse for Carl's death. But then he turned right back into an asshole. When he blamed Rick for the Carl's death, I'm Dieta on this one. You're a liar, Negan. Shut your pie hole.
Before you finish that, I wondered about whether or not he read the letter, and obviously he didn't read the letter at first there, but based on his conversation with Negan, I thought that he did read the letter, or maybe he skimmed it.
I think he really just skimmed the words, just read what he wanted to read, and then got the point, but really didn't read into what Carl was saying. So yeah. I think Rick was at that point was just reading all the negativity and not seeing the positive of what Carl wanted Rick to read. So I think it's going to take some time for him, for Rick at this point to figure out what Carl was trying to convey. And on top of that, he did not read his own note. If you think about it, he only read Negan's at that point when he called Negan. So,
well, I thought, maybe I don't know. I have to think that we're going to see a scene, you know, with, Chandler Riggs, you know, voiceover or something, with him reading the letter. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if we have that kind of voiceover with all of the letters, you know, but I tend to think that's how that's going to play out, but we don't know yet. So
I'm pretty sure you're going to get that. I don't think Chandler's done with this season yet.
Yeah.
There's going to be callbacks to it, almost similar to like with what Sarah Wayne Calise did. You know, she did images, but she wasn't really in the scene, but her visual was there. Kind of like,
right.
Chandler did that whole little segue about him in the nightgown with the hat on Carl's head, from the prison scene back in the day. But, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm sure there was ADR done. And, I'm sure he did some overdubs based upon that. So that will actually help out the story and for Rick to actually overcome everything that he's going to get to that end point on episode 16 and where we're going to see him. But, let's move on. She then says, and then let's have a moment with the blue paint. Did Carl visit the trash people and get that blue paint? What was the significance of it? Please discuss.
Well, maybe that blue paint came from Alexandria, much like the applesauce did. So, you know, that, or it's just a quinky dink. and like I could see Michonne reacting to the blue paint in some way. I don't know how that's going to play out, but I could see that. So I don't know.
All right.
Next, Kyle says, Jada speaking normal after she lost everything. I felt bad for her, and then I also hated her more because she spoke so weird all this time. I guess, in a way, I could agree with that. That whole group, I guess they were artists or something, like hipsters in our day of age. Just go take your typewriter, your feathered fedora, and frack off. They did not contribute anything to the entire story. It was a waste of time and resources. Yes. Yes, those good old resources. I would agree. I haven't been bashful talking about how much I hate the trash people. and I am so glad that all but one is dead. And, you know, I've heard there's been, you know, speculation about her becoming the big bad going forward based on the comic book. And supposedly that's been denied. It's a possibility. She could just fade away. I don't know, much like what's his face did. Who am I thinking of? Heath. You know, she'll go star on the next spin-off of 24. I don't know, but we'll see.
I have to give props to Kyle. Thank you for the Battlestar Galactica frack comment.
Yeah, I like that too.
So, Lara Willie Swink says, this is my biggest grudge with the TWD this half season and this episode. This was supposed to be an episode where to see Negan's human side, because supposedly he's showing real remorse for Carl's death. But my issue is that I never saw this relationship build up. The only times we saw Carl and Negan together, Negan was either trying to maim or kill Carl, or Carl was trying to kill Negan. Even when they had their face-to-face at the sanctuary, I never felt like Negan deeply connected with Carl. I can see him respecting Carl for his gumption, but they never connected the way that Carl had with his father, or even with Daryl or Herschel, for that matter. And now that the audience is supposed to believe that Negan is broken up about Carl, I'm sorry, but at least for me, that emotion was never earned by the writers. Carl's story ended before that kind of relationship could ever develop, and I'm not going to feel it just because the writers tell me, yeah, and not matter how well JDM performs the scene. Sorry for the huff puffing, but I did like this episode better than the past few lately. Honestly, they did build up that relationship during that time in the sanctuary. It was very true to the original comic in the idea of how they interacted. You know, that was what the whole point was, especially that time at Alexandria when Negan made him pasta. And, honestly, it was showing, it was like, you know, Carl, please pass the rolls. You know, those little things were times with him and Judith and Negan alone with Carl, and breaking Carl down and understanding how Carl felt about himself with that eye. That was a big step for Carl, and it was a big step for Negan, because it was showing his human side. If you didn't get that from those scenes, I don't know, but I really grasped that from that. It showed his human side, kind of like how he conveyed to Rick saying how he was truly sorry about Carl when he found out that Carl died. I don't know. It's maybe some people are losing some things, but maybe I read the comic and I've been watching the show and I already know those things in some way and I know how it feels, but I didn't see it from that perspective. I read those things as they came. And then when I saw the show, I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. They're bringing this through. But you know, for somebody who's from that perspective of just watching the show, I can understand those feelings. You know, it's like maybe I didn't see it through their eyes, but, you know, I'm just seeing it through my eyes where I read and I watched both. So, I don't know.
I see her point and I see yours. I think that they could have sold that story a little bit better. I think, yes, I think it was told well in the Sing Me a Song from last season, episode 7, I think. But they could have continued to build upon that relationship between Carl and Negan, and they didn't for the most part. So, you know, like, I think, I hate to say it again, you know, not to pile on them, but the trash people, you know, perhaps if the trash people and, you know, the Oceansiders and that hadn't been introduced into the story, maybe there would have been more time to, tell that Negan-Carl story, you know, but they didn't give the time to it that it probably deserved. So anyway, I'm kind of in between on this, between, Nara and you, Mark, that I think it was there, but I think they could have done a better, job selling it, you know, so, all right. Well, that's it for our feedback. So we covered this episode pretty well, but there are a couple things we had that haven't been discussed. So one little thing, how did all those walkers get into Alexandria? I wasn't too, how did that, did they just get in because things got burned or what? What did you think of that?
I think that with the burning and everything else, everything lumbered down. Kind of like, remember when the wolves came in? They yeah. just came in on their own. They broke in. Defenses were down. They had a truck. But I think some of those things went down at the time when they were trying to rebuild after the wolves, and it burnt down, and all the dead started walking in. That was my thought.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, possibly. What do you have?
Rick telling Negan that Carl left him a note, and Negan making it look like that it was all Rick's fault. Plus the sympathy from Negan about Carl. Negan way out of character. You know, that was way out of character from the actual traditional thought of Negan. Him showing sympathy to Rick about Carl's death, meaning that there was some sort of relationship with Negan and Carl. But then Negan's pompous attitude about how the reason why Carl was dead is because Rick didn't comply with Negan's thought of
yeah.
how to live a life in this world. You didn't conform to my ideas in Negan's mind. So, and it's one of those pompous attitudes of, you have to do what I say, and if you didn't do what I say, well, this is the reason why this happened. So, I don't know. I have a funny feeling something's going to happen down the line where Negan changes his mind.
It's like what we saw with Alexandria, the thought that it in season 5, how many of you do I have to kill to make a point? It's similar with Negan, I think. And that talks to, you know, the whole dysfunction and, just, fatal flaw of what he's built, that, you know, supposedly he's going to save people, but at the same time, he's going to subvert them to the point of subsistence, you know, where they're basically doing everything to live and, you know, just eking by serving the saviors and giving them everything. You know, it's like a protection racket gone wacko. You know, instead of it like, you know, it would be a shame if your business caught a fire. You know, it's more like, you know, it's more like you're going to give us 90% of what you find and what you earn. And we're going to, you know, leave 10% for you, just enough so that you don't starve to death. It that's essentially what, you know, Negan's thing is. But it's kind of, I mean, I think it's even more so, something I thought of, like Negan in his own strange way, though, is better than the alternative. Like, what if essentially if Simon was ruling the saviors, they would basically kill everybody. And that's probably what happened with the Oceanside, you know, and there was the thing from earlier in the season about, was it, how'd they put it? Backsliding.
Yeah.
You know, which I guess is like a religious term, which I didn't know, but
yeah.
I just think of it, you know, whether it's religious or not, it essentially to me means, you know, falling back to previous behavior. So, you know, I tend to wonder if Simon, you know, led the Saviors originally, or if they were doing that kind of thing early on and they stopped. I don't know.
Well, basically, to sum up, you're saying that Negan is the Tony Soprano of the zombie apocalypse, and Simon was the head, which I had actually had thought of a long time ago, because originally in 3-2-1, spoiler, in the books, Dwight was the head of the Saviors. In the comic books. And,
yeah.
The thing is that, the show is going on its own. So I wouldn't be surprised if Simon was ahead of the actual Saviors in the beginning. And then Negan took over using Lucille as a point of intimidation to do what he needed to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, the show is moving on in a sense where they have to show these two diverse thoughts of not power, but of living. So, Negan has his point of view saying, I only take out one person. Now, mind you, Simon just took out everybody in Garbage Pail Kids land. That's what he probably had done previously before Negan took control. And Negan was trying to show him saying, you need to do your job. And he screamed it out at him. So I wouldn't be surprised if we do see the end of Simon at the end, because he has to make a point. And then Rick is still in his mind, but also struggling with the notes from Carl about a real world, kind of like what Carl's vision of the future is for Rick and everybody else. So there's that struggle. So there's this war is going to end in a sense where something's going to come together, where it's going to be a happy medium or some semi-happy medium and whatever it can be in a zombie apocalypse. So, you know, there's so much going on, and I really want to see what's going to happen. That's really what glued me into as a viewer from day one. How is this going to end? Where is this going to go? So,
yeah. Why is Rick so clueless about what Carl wants or wanted? You think, considering what I just said about it taking so long for him to die, didn't you think they had more time to talk about it?
Yeah, planting herbs and, you know, feeding pigs.
It just, you know, it seemed like they would, you know, they would have had the chance to discuss specifically what Carl wanted. I don't know. It just seems so forced, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on.
All right. So now it is time, which usually comes way earlier in the episode, but it's new home, news, ratings, and info.
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
All right. Well, I don't have any info. I'm just going to go straight into ratings, and I'm going to do this quick. Season 8, episode 9, the season premiere Honor. It got better ratings than the season finale, a 3.64, sorry, mid-season finale, 3.64 in the 18 to 49 with 8.282 million viewers, which actually was the fourth highest ratings for the week if you look at combined broadcast and cable behind Three Nights of the Olympics. And it was definitely the number one show on cable that week. Unfortunately, though, the trend did not continue, and we saw some of the worst ratings we've seen in a very long time for the show with this episode. Episode 10, The Lost and the Plunderers, only got a 2.86 in the 18 to 49. You know, compared to a lot of other shows, that's great. But this is the lowest rating since season 1, episode 5.
Hmm.
That's how far you have to go back to see ratings that low. It got 6.82 million, which is the lowest since episode 11 of season 2, which was the episode that Dale died, Judge, Jury, and Executioner. If I had to guess, I think a lot of people are starting, you know, basically waiting and going to watch a show later. You know, they're going to DVR it specifically this week because the Oscars were this week and it got really big ratings. It got like 26 million. It's also, I think, you know, we're going to see basically, I think people are waiting and they're going to binge it at the end of the season. I hate to say it, but, you know, it's still getting better ratings than a lot of shows, but it's not as good as it used to be. Talking Dead for episode 9 got a 1.47 in the 18 to 49 with 3.593 million. And like I said, for the mid-season finale, it was better than that. For this episode, again, though, it went pretty low. It got a 1.06 in the 18 to 49 with 2.651 million viewers. So, not good. And, you know, given the, since we've been on so long, I'm going to not go into a detailed, analysis of it.
But
yeah, I do too. And I think, next week ratings will be up, but it's still kind of disappointing. Just a couple little things in news. I know I'm pretty sure there were more things, mentioned on Talking Dead, there is a new Walking Dead edition of Trivial Pursuit, which I used to, I was undefeated in Trivial Pursuit for the longest time. I think someone finally, beat me, but, yeah, I'm pretty good at trivia, so I will probably get that at some point.
I actually bought that.
Oh, you did?
I bought that actually before they announced it. I bought that 2 months previous.
Oh, okay.
And I'm ready to actually challenge a bunch of people. Hopefully it's at the Zed Head Barbecue.
Yeah. Last thing on Twitter, Kari Payton actually spoke out about Lauren Cohan's contract and said, pay the woman.
Yeah.
So, I think there's been some other things that have been said about it. So, you know, the actors are even, you know, going ahead and saying these things. It just, you know, I agree. I don't think that, I don't think it's a good thing. I think it's, I hate to say it, but like AMC, they seem to be like, you know, like your classic, shyster type of entrepreneur trying to, you know, milk the every last penny out of things and, you know, trying to get, you know, the episodes done for, or the, you know, the show, done for the least possible stuff and all the, you know, the suing that's going on for, you know, not paying what the show is worth and all that stuff. It just, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, to submit your feedback, and anything else you have about the show, And if you have any theories for what's to come, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And there you can submit text or audio, use the SpeakPipe widget that you'll see there. You can also use the voicemail, which is 304-837-2278. Or like most people, that the feedback, especially I think all of the feedback except for Gary's feedback that you heard at the beginning, came through our Facebook group. That's at facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. And if you aren't a member, Carl says,
are you kidding me?
Or at least he used to. You can also submit feedback through our Gmail, which is walkingdeadgsm@gmail.com. We had to extend the feedback 3 nights, unfortunately, because of me moving and some power outages that Mark had earlier in the week. But we will go back to a Monday deadline. And don't forget that daylight savings time comes back this coming weekend. So that will be Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. So like if you're, you know, in Europe, just remember that that's an hour earlier this week coming because we changed to daylight savings time ahead of you guys. Also, our Twitter is at WalkingDeadGSM. If you want to support us or the network, best way to do it, other than joining the Facebook group, when we tweet, when we post, share our posts, but you can also help us to get more popular, and we somehow, I think this was a statistical blip, but somehow we got to be in the top 100 movers on Stitcher this week at number 11. I don't know how that happened. It trust me, it did not equate to, you know, thousands of downloads. But I guess there weren't that many people listening to us on Stitcher, and, you know, suddenly there's more. I don't know, but that was kind of cool. Anyway, support us. One way to get to all the Golden Spiral Media podcasts is to go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple. That will take you within Apple Podcasts to Golden Spiral Media page. And, of course, whatever podcast client you use, subscribe to us, and that way you'll get the next episode. And if you use Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, actually, we don't have any reviews in Stitcher. So if you want to help us out, write us a review in Stitcher. But give us a rating or review in Apple Podcasts. That will help. We didn't get any new reviews this week, though. And to support the network, there are some ways to do it at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. Our next episode is for Season 8, Episode 11, with the very strange title of Dead or Alive Or, written and directed by We Don't Know, and the description is Daryl finds himself in bad company as his group heads to the hilltop. And it's kind of funny because the last description mentioned people going to the hilltop, but we really didn't see that this week.
No.
Gabriel's faith gets tested. So, until next time, I'm Brian.
And I am Mark.
And this is the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night.